Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another one of our Thursday streams.
Indeed.
We're going to be discussing some cool stuff from cool people with cool technology, like the Rand Corporation. I'm joined
Oh,
by
it's so cool.
it's so cool, guys, the Bluetooth diaper. I'm joined, as always, by my Thursday co-host. It's so cool, guys, the
Trick.
Bluetooth diaper. How you doing there, Trick?
Pretty good, pretty good. I've been playing with new toys and setting up my microphone, so hopefully not sounding too boomerish this time. But no, pretty good, pretty good. So recovering from a conversation where we were having last night with a flat earther. I'm still shaking off certain comments that were made there. But I hope you're well. You're well, and things are going good. Looking forward to this stream. It's been making me think of terrible Joss Whedon movies that we were just talking about.
Oh yeah,
Boy Man and the like.
we were talking about Joss Whedon being a bit rapey off air, but that's a complete non sequitur in the stream. I'm also joined by the host of the Monday show, since
Oh.
Monday is your show, Evelyn.
Yes, I believe
Evelyn,
so.
Evelyn
Hello.
is also here.
I am also here, if you couldn't notice. And to like Brian E in chat, he's the real fan. I've returned with my Scrump Funko Pop Trig t-shirt. And Evelyn Brand soy milk. That
Oh
man's
no,
committed.
not
He's
the
in on the
soy milk. You should get
brand.
some the Evelyn brand would surely be whole milk.
Oh, see, that's the joke, but it's this whole milk
Aha,
with estrogen in it. It's
that is the joke. I get it. I'm clever. I'm smart. I understand the things. As always, I will get the YouTube-y stuff out of the way first. You can still support us via super chats if you want to do that. Although a lot of people don't like giving Google the money. We do have memberships still available somehow. So if you want to support us on a weekly basis, that's probably the best way right now, since things like Subscribestar aren't appropriate for people with smaller audiences. And the best way to donate to us, where we get the biggest cut, is Streamlabs. That is in the description, and it is also the pinned message in the chat if you want to have your comment guaranteed to be read out on air. Just the normal shilly YouTube-y stuff. But our topic today is the therapeutic state, which, if you're not familiar with the concept, is a bit of a cryptic title. I don't know, Evelyn.
Yes.
Want to start with a little explainer on what the therapeutic state is?
Yeah, I think we are probably best starting with, and I'm hoping pretty much everyone that was is here this evening was hopefully here or caught up on stuff we were talking about on Monday. But one of the sort of ideas that Francis was discussing on one of the essays that we were reading was this notion of environmentalism. And
Yes.
not in, the sense of preserving ecology, but in the sense that the environment can be used wholesale to explain inequalities and the human experience and tragedy and all these different number of things. And that therefore, if you change the environment in some way, then it's likely to believe that you may change the outcomes of the people in some way, shape, or form. And that
Right.
this
Oh, Trick,
has.
not to single you out as the boomer of the group, but since you are slightly older and have a different kind of take on the education system, when you were at school, were you taught that it was mostly nurture and minimally nature? I'd be interested about like how that was taught to you as a concept.
No, there was very definite, mind you, bearing in mind my education and things were set apart from that. There was definitely an awful lot about good breeding and having good genetics being a core factor, which is why the cream tends to rise to the top. And men of my caliber and people that were at the at as you know, I was at a boarding school. We deserve to be there because by nature of the fact that we were sort of born into families that were already at the top, and therefore this was the natural order of things, essentially.
It's just something I forgot to ask last time. And yeah, the cream does definitely rise at a boarding school.
Just, oh
sorry.
nah.
Sorry. Well, sorry, you were saying there, Rebel.
Yes. So if I haven't completely lost my train of thought,
if you have this general notion that therefore the environment and ultimately sort of the upbringing or the nurturing is the phrase you've used as the key determinant for explaining people's outcomes, then you would go to great pains to, you know, influence this upbringing. But in most cases, it was education. I mean, the core idea discussed through a lot of Francis and Gottfried, who we'll get into a little bit, and I think they both very heavily borrow from Burnham on this, that he grasped that there would be no progressive era and there would have been no managerial revolution had it not been for the liberal focus on education and a universalist form of education that applied to one sort of set of general theories, which of course came from the science. And that once you've underlined all these egalitarian views by the science, you then have a very strong basis to refer back to, at least in the eyes of the uninitiated public, as to how they should be and what they should do. And that maybe if they don't do what you want, as the managerial elites generally don't think that you do, then maybe they can fix you in some kind of way. Maybe that through the 20s and 30s was through bizarre Freudian psychoanalytical thinking, and then through into, you know, education programs, and then into weird, you know, focus enhancing drugs in the 80s and 90s, and now into some of the things that we'll discuss.
Well, again, not too much of a tangent, I hope, but me and you, Trigg, had a bit of a discussion about whether or not we could fit in a lot of the psychology, the popular psychology stuff, in the democratization stuff, and we just couldn't find a place for it. It's going to have to really be its own episode about how, like, you know, how, like, the mass psychological movement started by Freud and brought on by others had a quite a large effect on how the managerialists and the population saw themselves.
I think,
I mean, it's huge. I mean, Freud and Freud's relatives are still major players in advertising and psychological.
Who was Freud's nephew?
Oh God, I'm trying to remember his name. Let me just look that up.
Bernays.
I was going to say maybe. Given that we are on, we've already got ourselves to, what we refer to as things like a behavioural scientist, it might be worth opening up for the first bit of Paul Gottfried that I grasp, where he begins to discuss about the therapeutic state.
That should be the first one in the document there.
Yes.
Or I think it's the first image linked in.
It's the if you go to the Google document, it's the first image.
Yes.
We did
shove them in the. Sorry, Trigg gets. I keep referring to him as the stream pusher, so he gets stream pushing duties pushed on him.
See, that's why I wanted to make the document. I thought I'll make Trigg's life easier, so all the images are in one place.
You want some stream?
Hey, you want some St. Francis?
But the for those of you who don't know, Paul Gottfried is. Evelyn, I'm sure you could give a better introduction than I could.
Paul Gottfried is, I couldn't tell you his life story, to be totally honest. All I know is he follows on from the thinking of Burnham and Francis. He's a big studier of Schmitt. He's also like one of the very few people that's far out on the fringe who is like, yes, Jews have an errant sort of in-group, shall we say, preference that is not true in other races, and he would know that because he is Jewish. He's one of those kind of ones. But yes, he writes at length on things like the managerial state and the concepts of what he refers to as after-liberalism, which is a book we will be coming back to probably quite frequently with a lot of other Gottfried's works.
Who wants to handle this first one then?
I can go if you want.
Take it away.
Yeah, yeah.
The invasion of government and courts by behavioural scientists has produced what Thomas Szasz calls the therapeutic state. Psychiatrists and social psychologists have been given social status according to Szasz, and their moral and political judgments, though not always founded on hard empirical science, are taken to be expert. These experts today can affect decisions about the responsibility of criminals, the right to control property, and the custody of children. psychiatric theologians have been able to impose their private political opinions as a scientific truth, and Saz states that the American Psychiatric Association now defines involuntary treatment incarceration of mental patients as health rights. Saz also observes, if people believe that health values justify coercion, but that moral and political do not, those who wish to coerce others will tend to enlarge the category of health values at the expense of moral values.
Extremely relevant.
Health values have also become socialized through a global managerial culture since 1976. The United Nations, through its International Covenant on Economic, Cultural and Social Rights, has elevated the enjoyment of the highest standard of mental health to a sacred entitlement. Henceforth, governments must ensure a sound state of mind as a human right.
Oof. There's a lot to unpack there.
Something ironic about that last line as well, seeing as mental health seems to be plummeting at the present moment.
But I think it's briefly worth discussing the kind of context he's talking about here. These are, you know, cream of the crop progressive thinkers in the 20s and 30s who are talking about things like crime reform and, you know, the same people who were part of like things like the Fabian Society and had some very interesting ideas about what things you could get out of people if you did bizarre and horrendous things to them, essentially in their childhood. So that is where this thinking is coming from.
So we do also have a quick donation here from Diana Moonglumpers. I think that might be the same Diana that we know. As handicapper a general, I approve of this depression. I approve of the depression headsets. We'll get to those later. What were you saying, Drake?
I was just saying that it's kind of ironic about the plummeting sort of mental health and the final line there, because the state is definitely not looking out for human rights. It isn't good at identifying things and saying that they are, which they usually aren't, and then sort of, well, driving everyone crazy in the process. But carry on. But
one of the core tenets of the therapeutic state is it offers solutions to problems it causes itself. Mm-hmm. I think we'll get. I'm not sure if that's in one of these other excerpts.
You'll find a bit of that in some of the stuff we get. I believe
it's classic state growth, though, isn't it? It's identify a problem, then require taxation to fund the solving of that problem.
Well, there's also an interesting legal thing that came around roughly the same time, not into the 70s, but prior than that, that you had all of a sudden these legal terms of clinically sane and clinically insane, which meant that a doctor with the authority, I think, of a judge, or probably not even a judge, maybe just a prosecutor, could declare a person, you know, legally insane and therefore incapacitated, and take them away and imprison them. And that it would be very naive to believe that this sort of notion of unhealthy or mentally unsound wouldn't ever necessarily be abused towards a certain set of values or anything like that.
And it is really horrendous. I mean, mental health issues. The moment you are not of right mind and are sectioned, you lose so many rights. It's untrue, and the state suddenly gains the rights to do all sorts. We were looking to this last year, in fact the year before, when they were started foot talking about COVID vaccines, that they were looking at declaring people that refused the vaccine as basically insane, not mentally competent, using those rights that they lost and the gain basically hold you down and force you to have the vaccine. At which point they can then declare you sane again, and off you go.
I don't know if you want to look at the next paragraph that's under this one, but this is what Gottfried goes on to discuss: is that this then just becomes politicized. I mean, there's no other way to look at it.
Do you want to read this one then, Trig? I know you've not seen it before, and it might be a bit. Trig, for those who don't know, me and Trig are both dyslexic, so sometimes first reading of things can be a bit rough.
But
we soldier on.
I have been practicing my cold reading. I did something a while ago.
I'm getting a peat. Has anyone got a peat in there?
Okay,
not
so
that kind of...
Christopher Latch explains the process by which the therapeutic segment of the managerial elite won moral acceptance, despite the fact that its claims to be providing mental health were always self-serving and highly subjective. The therapeutic class offered ethical leadership in the absence of shared principles, by defining emotional well-being as both a social good and overcoming of what is individually and collectively dangerous. The behavioral scientists have been able to impose their absolutes upon culturally fluid society. In The True and Only Haven, Latch explores the implications of post-war politics in the authoritarian personality. A chief contributor to this anthology, Theodore Adorno, abandoned his earlier work as cultural critic to become a prominent governmentally imposed social therapy. According to Latch, Adorno condemns undesirable political attitudes as prejudice, and by defining prejudice as a social disease, substituted in medical for a political idiom. In the end, Adorno and his colleagues relegated a broad range of controversial issues to the clinic, to scientific study as opposed to philosophical and political debate.
For those of you who don't know, Theodore Adorno is one of the principal founders of the Frankfurt School. Theodore Adorno is like the psychological component of what became denazification. His theories and you know, his the weight of his words had a large impact on the post-war shaping of the German state, along with, of course, Marcuse.
As my hopes for the post-democratization stuff this year to get people to be actually sick to the bone of hearing of names of like Theodore Adorno and Horkheimer and all these kind of types and Marcuse. Well, do you tell you what's funny, actually? Do you know who happened to study under Marcuse?
It was Hans Semenhoff, wasn't it?
No, Paul Gottfried.
Was it? Oh, right. I thought it was Hoppe.
Hoppe studied under Habermas.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
But I do find it very, very interesting that Gottfried studied under Marcuse, of all people, and then went off to become like one of the foremost Schmidt scholars. It's like, oh my god, he knew.
Forged in Asses, when we undertake some of the post-democratization stuff we're hoping to do, there will be a large section about the reshaping of post-war Germany and the Frankfurt School and denazification, because they are the blueprint of how you break down and rebuild a society in like a managerialist's image. It is quite an amazing worked example, and it's funny that you get, you know, the Frankfurt School has gone through many iterations on Wikipedia, but the Frankfurt School is referred to as a conspiracy theory, basically, because of how powerful it is. If you talk about their works on, you know, cultural Marxism, that term has become a colloquialism of many boomer conservatives, but they don't understand the real meaning of what they're talking about. They certainly don't understand the thinkers behind it, and certain concepts they espouse themselves as being the work of those thinkers. So yeah, we will be going into that in quite a lot of detail at some point.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to what we just said there, this is absolutely horrendous, because let's face it, psychological, mental health and that psychology, that study, it is a very, very new, and I use the term loosely, science. And only 100 years ago, we were going, oh, this person's insane, let's sort of lobotomize them. And these days, it's more of a case of the same thing, but using chemicals. It is so very definitely not a science, and still very, very experimental, and well, it's quite brutal, in fact. And to suddenly to start using this as a way of defining political position, and you know, as you say there, sort of political idiom, and just go, no, insane, and potentially just sort of throw them in a room with a straitjacket on and dope them out of their mind, it's horrendous.
We see the fruit of this with you know, people being diagnosed with climate change and racism being declared a national public health crisis.
Yes,
that is straight from this. People didn't see where that came from. But if they'd been paying attention in the 50s and the 60s, they would have known where all of this came from, because this has been in the pipeline for a very long time.
this book was written in 1997, I think, or 94, one of the two. Clinton had just won, so sorry, 96 or 97. So it's very interesting that, you know, Gottfried, it's just one example, has considered these ideas for the last 20-odd years. I'd imagine it's no surprise to him that we are now completely dominated day by day in dialectical and sort of political discussions almost entirely by public health concerns. And we're dealing with, you know, the most important issue in governance at the moment is compliance towards public health goals, which is complete newspeak. But to them, that's their magic. That's their sauce. That's the stuff that makes them tick.
I've deliberately saved myself the last quote because it is my favourite.
Gaius Nordius Caesar just put a comment in the chat. It's horrifying to read. I feel for you, dude. This is, you know, the fact that it is not an uncommon thing that people will say the wrong thing to the wrong person and suddenly find the state is taking away their rights and putting them at least in for evaluation.
Thank you, guys. Nolly Caesar for the $20 there. I will read the comment out. It says, I know all too well the state's taking away rights by saying you are not sane. I was put into a ward with no trial and frankly by mistake that they admitted to. I'm still fighting them 5 years later to get them back. One of the most dangerous people to you if you live in the United States is your closest living relative. Because they have the authority to have you sectioned, and you cannot be removed from medical psychiatric care unless you are basically declared sane by a doctor, or if your relative comes and revokes what they have said. It's something that happens all the time with children that parents can't deal with. Yeah. They end up medicalizing the system. Some of them from like more than a decade. And a lot of people don't realize that is one of like the most risky things that can happen to you in the US. It can happen to basically anybody.
It can happen in the UK as well. I can't remember the details of it. I remember that there was a case of a doctor, a psychiatrist, looking into the state of mental health psychiatric hospitals, and to do that, he decided to go undercover, and sectioned himself. Using his own name, sectioned himself to, sectioned a character that he created and then played the part of, into a hospital to actually see what it was like from the side of a patient. And after being there for a couple of weeks or months, I'm not sure exactly the details, it's a while since I've read this, he basically then went to his psychiatrist that was there and went, actually, this is my name. I've been doing a case study on this and you can let me out now. I want to write this up. And they basically patted him on the head. He went, there, that's nice. Go and speak to Jesus over in the corner and here you're on even more drugs. And it took him ages to get out because he was actually denied access to people in the outside world that could verify his story. And, you know, very nearly ended up being sectioned for life for just, you know, putting himself in there under the guise of a study. Totally sane. But because of once you're in, it's very difficult sometimes to get out of these places.
I guess I will I'll go over this quote, though. It starts with, Callan's treatment of values must be understood as one of the several strategies pursued by pluralist thinkers developing modern behavioral agendas. What has made these strategies effective and these agendas compelling is not the airtight reasoning behind them. Some of the most respected pluralists present hand-to-mouth arguments. But these arguments have prevailed in the court of public opinion because they jibe with what the managerial state is doing. To ask a regime engaged in behavioral modification to go on with its work for the sake of tolerance or niceness is to address the converted. And to use the terms liberal and democratic in the post-liberal, post-democratic senses in which they are now routinely applied is to avoid being controversial or insensitive. The argumentative rules adopted to consolidate the political status quo go from forcing an argument to actual intimidation. They begin by appealing to unproven premises, which the reader is nudged into accepting, move on to therapeutic criteria for right reasoning. And finally, as seen in recent hate speech and anti-Holocaust revisionist laws, end by reverting to argumentum baculatum, which may mean baculinum, sorry, which may mean arresting those considered criminally insensitive. Where was it you heard like the argumentum ad Hitlerum?
Yeah, somewhere else where they essentially discuss these similar ideas from Lash and Adorno, and the general point he's building through one of these paragraphs is that, you know, all of these methods of, you know, environmental influence, once they were politicized, which they were always going to be, they can be used and implemented into people's lives so that, you know, you then build this mindset of, well, if people are homeschooled, then they'll be fascists. They won't be bred into the over-socialization of our liberal democracies, the terms they're using here. And I think he goes on to call this argument ad Hitlerum, which I think's just hilarious. It's the same as, what's the whole thing about you can only appear on the internet for so long before someone mentions Hitler? It's like the OG 90s intellectual paleocon version of like noticing that Hitler's just like the eternal bad guy.
It's Godwin's Law.
I would search the PDF for it, however, I can't search up the italics and argumentum ad Hitlerum is written in italics, I'm afraid. But it's roughly a very similar point to this. You know, these people essentially standing in front of you telling you that if you don't, you know, abide by quote unquote liberal democracy, which essentially means bow down and use and get in front of me and do as I please, then you're evil. You're wrong.
I will say, if it wouldn't have got us like an actual real-time copyright strike, I would have opened this stream with some variant of REM's Shiny Happy People, but... because we're going to get into some stuff about the frontiers of the therapeutic state. but the... Do you want to go over the last quote, maybe?
Yeah, I can go over the Francis quotes there if you want.
Yes, some more setup for explaining the therapeutic state in this framework, so we can get onto some of like the demonstrative meat of what we're seeing as the next frontier. We're going to go over some one of our favorite texts, which is San Francisco's Leviathan and Its Enemies. You've probably heard at least 10 consistent pages throughout all of our streams. We've read quite a lot of it, but
but for good reason though. Anyway. Have you got the quote up, Trig?
I have it here, yes.
Cool.
Yes, he has.
The managerial justification for the substitution of administration, bureaucracy and expertise for bourgeois legal codes and judicial and legislative institutions is a claim that managerial technique is able to resolve the conflicts and flaws of human society and to ameliorate the human condition. Thus, crime, war, ignorance, poverty, disease, slums, etc. become problems to be solved by management. And its formula of scientism, the application of science to human relations and institutions. And the managers portray the persistence of the bourgeois institutions and values as itself a problem or obstacle to managerial progress. The claims of the managers are generalized in meliorist or utopian formulas that not only serve the interests of the managerial as a whole, but also exert immense appeal to the mass population. Meliorist and utopian formulations are contained also in what Christopher Lash has called the new therapeutic conception of the state, which regards autonomous social institutions as the sources of social pathologies that must be cured and corrected by bureaucratically administered and scientifically informed therapies that serve to transfer control of the process of socialization to the managerial bureaucracy. The fostering of meliorism and utopianism by the managerial state is thus implicit in its political dynamic as well as in its bureaucratic structure and its specialized managerial and technical skills, just as the fostering of mass hedonism and cosmopolitanism is implicit in the dynamic of managerial capitalism. I love how 1984 he split up this Christopher Lash's text into, you know, the autonomous social institutions as the sources of social pathologies that must be cured.
Yeah. For those who don't know what the word meliorist means, it is a worldview that a better world can be made through human will. It's basically Maoism, to be honest. Mm. It's like 19th century do-gooder Maoism is meliorism. So that's what that is.
I don't know about 1984 though. This is if I was to say, which is it, 1984 or A Brave New World? It's almost leading to the latter in my opinion. But yes, still incredibly dystopian and horrendous. And
Forged in the Ashes is asking about Leviathan and its enemies. I've had a few people ask me about that. If you have read Burnham's Managerial Revolution and The Machiavellians, you are primed really for all you need.
I would argue also a bit of Rothbard's a good basis beforehand as well.
I think that could be picked out of any good reading of American history, but yes, Rothbard's probably the better place to go for that as well. I don't think it's as necessary though.
No.
It just helps.
If you're already familiar with the concepts of managerialism and elite theory, kind of in the abstract, you are also probably a bit more prepared than not the average person, but most people. But the average person they wouldn't know what they were reading with Leviathan and its enemies, as we've learned by suggesting it to a couple of the wrong people. But it is a worthwhile read if you have a basis in the theory that it's
I tell you what, the main thing for Francis, which is what will help us connect us to Mr. Uncle Ted in a couple of minutes, as much as Gottfried's take's amazing, and I like how, you know, precise he is by just being like, well, look, it's, you know, Holocaust revisionism laws, bingo, it's right there. But Francis is, again, he's more systemic. And this, he's taken a step back, which is partly because of, I think it was actually discussing this in a group the other day, the big distinguishment between Francis and Gottfried whilst they were still living essentially boiled down to the consideration of, like, if what Pareto and Mosca and Robert McKells and the elite theorists say is true, then all that really matters in distinguishing elite behaviour is whether or not they believe in the ideas. And Sam Francis believed that, for the most part, they didn't. And it also possibly it didn't really matter. And Gottfried seems to suggest that some of them do, and that this makes their temperament quite different. But I think that leaves you in a corner where like Francis was saying in the article on sort of equality as a political weapon, you know, if you take these people at face value, you might miss the trick. And sometimes, as much as they are offering something that looks totally ridiculous, once it integrates itself with some new developing part of the system that you haven't seen yet, then all of a sudden it makes sense and it bursts through. You know, and the way that the COVID thing doesn't really quite click until you begin to have an understanding of how these notions of public health were ever generated in the first place.
I was going to say, Trigg, you, again, as our resident boomer, when did you really start to see a lot of the, like, I know it wasn't as prevalent in the UK, but the medicalizing of people. When did you start coming across, at least regularly or semi-regularly, people who were taking things like SSRIs, or in the beginning maybe things like Prozac? In the UK, where does that really have its era?
I had a friend of mine that I grew up with. I knew her from when she was about sort of 5 years old. And she, in her mid-teens, suddenly started being basically prescribed things like amitriptyline and various other drugs.
Oof.
Because she was part Italian and part Romany, and was quite expressive with her feelings and a fairly loud person and prone to being a bit melodramatic. And yeah, they were just like, oh, you're a nutcase, and doped her up. And, you know, for quite a long time she was in that state. So I would say late 80s, early 90s I started running into it. I was actually studying neuro-linguistic programming in the early 90s. Not because I was interested in psychology, but Richard Bandler. It seemed like a very, very good way of it's a good method of control, is to be able to program people by speaking to them. And I was getting into sales and various other aspects of control. And I thought it was interesting to study that type of thing. So I did run into an awful lot of stories of that state. I very rapidly realized that these people were actually quite horrendous. Mind you, by the way I just made that sound, I was fairly horrendous back in those days as well. Because it is. Well, it's methods of control.
Nobody likes a salesman.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's not just that. It is studying modes of control of people without their consent, being able to, you know, put ideas into their head. And there's an awful lot of that in there as well. It's not just, oh, you know, these people think the wrong thing, therefore nuts. There's also methods and modalities of speech that essentially. I hypnotized by the very clearest definition of, you know, changing someone, altering someone's state by verbal communication. You can do it. It can be done, and you can, manipulate people into all sorts of things that they wouldn't normally agree to, and they find themselves walking away from it going, I'm not really sure why I've just bought the entire Encyclopedia Britannica, or why I just spent £500,000 on this new IT system for my company. But it seemed like a good idea at the time, and we'll see how it goes, because if I think back now, it seems a bit confusing, but, you know, I generally feel okay about it. And yeah, they've just been hypnotized by a very manipulative salesman. Essentially,
it is slightly Jedi mind tricks.
Yeah, it's very definitely that.
You will buy the accidental breakage insurance.
But I don't know. I think it's important to remember that these things do not first come from marketing in that sense. They came out of strategies of governments and psychological studies, and then were essentially used in the marketplace as testing. You know, that's how they prototype these things. Because I know that I was going to say a lot of the language to do around it is still. I think if you even study things like entrepreneurship degrees and whatever else, you're actually studying language that comes from medical documents. I mean, that's why part of it is about things like monitoring the subject and stuff like that. You know, that's directly medical terms.
Oh yeah, I mean Richard Bandler, who began the neurolinguistic programming stuff. And I've got a few of his books. They're actually very, very good books. If you're interested, I'll lend you one of those guys. They're very interesting to look into the study of how he was. But he came from a therapeutic background. The partner he was working with co-writing them. They were both psychiatrists who were also into computer programming in the 1960s. And they just were like, hold on a second. I can do this with a computer. I wonder if I can do this with the human mind as well. And combined the two things. Interesting.
I would say that NLP doesn't work on like high powered autists. Because I very obviously I learned about a lot of that stuff in passing quite a few years ago, and I was like in my early teens, and did a bit of cursive reading about, you know, how to detect when people are trying to talk like that, and not very in depth, but it used to be that you can encounter people who are obviously trying to use it, and as soon as you try and use it on someone who's educated about it, they can detect it like that. So
yes, that's part of why I was using it. I was reading up on it. And the other thing is, Richard Bandler walked away from it. He started it. He worked on it throughout the 80s, and got into the 90s and went, nah, everyone seems to have picked up on this, and they're not doing what I was suggesting, and they're bastardizing it horrendously, and walked away from it.
Well, that's what ended up becoming nudge theory. Yes. All these new data-driven science methods, which are ultimately just greater levels of systematization, which is the most important part, I think. For them to have a grand thing that they can point to that is a big index sheet of values and things and actions and basically point it and be like, you should do that because that's what the model citizen looks like. You know, he doesn't look like a great man, he doesn't look like a metaphysical type, he is a data and a spreadsheet, and if you don't fit into that box, you'll be drugged up and SSRIs and whatever else until you do. I mean, I don't know how much we want to take out of technological slavery, but
I would like to read like the first paragraph, I think it's not redundant, but I think a lot of people here know that.
Yes, well, I was gonna. That's what I was saying. I could pick.
I'd say maybe from point 144.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's point 145, which is quite nice and succinct, which is just the very simple question of imagine a society that subjects people to conditions that make them terribly unhappy. then gives them drugs to take away their unhappiness. Science fiction, it is already happening to some extent in our own society. It's well known that the rate of clinical depression has been greatly increasing in recent decades, blah, 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 SSRIs. It then goes on to say, you know, that drugs that affect the mind are only one example of the methods of controlling behaviour. It then begins to, conveniently enough, discuss surveillance, or monitoring, as you might understand it. It then further goes on to suggest that, you know, the entertainment industry serves as an important psychological tool of a system. Possibly even when it is dishing out large amounts of sex and violence, entertainment provides modern man with an essential means of escape. It's, you know, discussing about, well, both absorbed in television, videos, etc., he can forget stress, anxiety, frustration, dissatisfaction. Many primitive peoples, when they did not have any work to do, are quite content to sit for hours at a time and do nothing at all, because they are at peace with themselves and their world. But most modern people get constantly occupied or entertained. Otherwise, they get bored, i.e. they get fidgety, easy, irritable. He then goes on to discuss, I mean, I don't know, there's just quite a few pages here that all link up to it, but he talks about other techniques strike deeper than the foregoing. Education is now a simple affair of buzz, no longer a simple affair of paddling kids behind when he doesn't know his lessons and patting them on the head when he does know them. Has become a scientific technique for controlling the child's development. Sylvan learning centres, for example, have had great success in motivating children to study, and psychological techniques are also used with more or less success in many controversial schools. Parented techniques that are taught to parents are designed to make children accept the fundamental values of the system and behave in ways that the system finds desirable. Mental health programmes, intervention techniques, psychotherapy, and so forth are ostensibly designed to benefit individuals, but in practice they usually serve as methods for inducing individuals to think and behave as the system requires. Now, I mean, there's so much other points. He's talking here about children. I know there's a latter point in here where he essentially suggests, you know, like, after all this education, after all these drugs, if you can't be integrated into the system, then they just call you criminally insane and they lock you away. And they that's why they, you know, that is ultimately their justification for prisons in a really obscure sense, is that they actually can't deal with criminals properly other than just killing them. So they just lock them away from society so that it's a problem they don't have to solve. And that weird sense they were discussing before of problems.
There's another point here, which is point 149, part of it. He goes on to say, biological methods will probably have to be used. We have already mentioned the use of drugs in this connection. Neurology may provide other answers for modifying the human mind. He's talking about exactly what we're going to move on to probably next, which is the direct modification of, like, the human brain, or the direct modification of the human senses. Because one of the biggest points that people forget when they talk about things like MKUltra, when they talk about the psychology in the 60s and the previous psychiatry of the 20s and all of these mass manipulation techniques and the mass medicating of society and the Ritalin and the SSRIs, is that none of this actually works.
Yes. Well, see, this is the question. Will it work? And possibly the reason why they're running to all these different complex technologies is that the previous methods don't work. And this is a very interesting point that ties once again into Gottfried, because Gottfried's whole thesis in After Liberalism is that, you know, finally with the development of the managerial state, post-industrial society, no longer is man, as the state servant to man, the man is servant to state. And Ted Kaczynski seems to notice this as well. He's at 1.151. The social disruption that we see today is certainly not the result of mere chance. It can only be a result of the conditions of life that the system imposes on people. We've argued that the most important of these conditions is disruption of the power process. If the system succeeds in imposing sufficient control over human behaviour to assure its own survival, a new watershed in human history will have been passed. Whereas formerly the limits of human endurance have imposed limits on the development of societies, industrial technological society will be able to pass those limits by modifying human beings, whether by psychological methods or biological methods or both. In the future, social systems will not be adjusted to suit the needs of human beings. Instead, human beings will be adjusted to suit the needs of the system. Oh,
very, very brave new world.
Well, this was written, or well published very famously on under threat of blowing up aircraft in 1994. Was it 1992?
I think it's 95 to 97 that you have the whole debacle of him doing his last kind of hurrah with a runabout. So it's up till 95. I think that's what it is.
I mean, Huxley
we are obviously reading from Technological Slavery, and we are reading from Technological Society in its future. We are reading from Le Manifesto. So
Aldous Huxley was playing around with that idea back in, when was it, 1931, 1932, when he published Brave New World. It wasn't groundbreaking when Kaczynski wrote it. But yes, he is definitely along the same lines of they will be designing human beings to fit the needs of society.
He's able to demonstrate it without relying on large metaphors from non-fiction, which makes it a lot more interesting, I'll be totally honest. However, it's interesting to think Aldous Huxley, he again was to have been around the Fabian Society in the 1930s in Britain, where these very ideas, where the managerial revolution was birthed. So it's sort of no coincidence. It all comes full circle again.
Oh yeah, Huxley was desperately trying to warn people, like much like they say, sort of 1984 is a warning. These books were, they, people were looking at them and going, how do I get this information out to people in the form of a story that's going to be easily accessible, that might warn them that the future might not be as bright as they want it. And people go, oh, this is a good book, haha, and then carry on and go and do exactly what they warned against.
This is, as someone has pointed out in chat, C.S. Lewis, I think literally, or this is literally right about this too, I think he writes similar things about this in Abolition of Man, but I think that's in relation to serving a different morality, quite possibly. But it's also a theme you see in a lot of the writing across that period, is people beginning to notice the ordering of society and the duties throughout the hierarchy totally flipping on one another.
Mm. Well, what you get, and I've talked about to people previously, basically anyone who will listen, is when you get the fusion of like Francis and Kaczynski and Gottfried and, you know, people like Prato, what you get is the systematizing, the basically irrefutable point by point airtight logical work through of the systemization stuff from Kaczynski, but you add to that the layer of Francis and Gottfried, which is saying this system was set up and run by a class of people to enhance their own power and control. Because I think that's some of the stuff Technological Society is missing. He's describing the effect of the Technological Society, but he's not really talking about the power politics, you know, in specificity, and the managers and the managerialism. And you get these two together, you end up with, you know, the Technological Society as a construct of of an evil elite class. And obviously, if you add some Lenin into that, it becomes a class war by those people. But that's where the real fuse gets lit. But that's the secret sauce here, really. And I think that's what not just us, but there's quite a few people who are fusing together these ideas and seeing the parallels in, you know, all these different pieces of writing from all these different pieces of people, all these different people from, you know, all over the time periods, really, who are drawing on each other quite a lot of the time, and rediscovering really something that has been known for a very, very, very long time, which is, you know, how societies are shaped by an elite class, and learning the ramifications of, you know, the modern state in that framework. But it's been interesting to see people, you know, slowly coming to their own realizations of these facts and how these jigsaw pieces fit together.
Well, especially in regards to Kaczynski, it's becoming very difficult to deny. And I think the fact that something like the Rand Institute puts out a document called...
The
Rand Corporation puts out a document called The Internet of Bodies.
It's such an ominous title, because it sounds like it sounds like literally a network made up of like corpses, of like human,
the calorie flesh. Batteries.
Lots of brains in a jar networked to give you increased processing power. Yep.
we use it as the thumbnail, but the crap the crap art. It's like very MS Paint. I have no mouth and I'm a scream. It's like if Globo Homo decided that it, like, you know, I have no mouth and I'm a scream is a good thing actually. Oh dear, but just, I don't know. Shall we? We use the big brain chakra image. We were trying to use the image from Tool's Parabola of the dude. He's like the big brain meme. He's got all the eyes around him.
Opening up.
Yeah, and he's got his low angle. He's got his hand stretched out. It's just as Parabola's peaking. Great track, by the way. But
it looks very Sacred Mirrors kind of artwork. I don't know if you've
ever heard of that. It's like chakras. It's like chakra slash Kabbalah stuff.
Yeah,
well, there is a weird aspect to that to it. I mean, the notions that come from these sentiments of environmentalism in the progressive era were already a kind of corrupted Hegelianism looking to perfect man. And as soon as they realise they can put silicon chips inside your head to stop you being racist, that only becomes an ever more sort of powerful myth.
Oh, it's the thing is the Rand Corporation has nothing to do with Ayn Rand. People keep asking about that, and it's for those who don't know, and I thought most people knew, the Rand Corporation is a non-profit in massive quotation marks that was set up by the U.S. Department of Defense in order to essentially study the military aspects of really kind of like MK Ultra shit. It is the Rand Corporation essentially puts out documents that resemble silent weapons for quiet wars quite regularly.
that's another one for one day. We'll keep that in the backlog for a future stream.
Well, the silent weapons for quiet wars is quite good for skits posting in places because there's a lot of it that is not quite there. Honestly, there's a lot of silent weapons for quiet wars that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I bet you it makes sense if you read it now.
No. It's getting at things that have been more fleshed out. It's a very strange document because it is a mix of very specific things that we now pretty much have proof for and complete fantasy.
I do like that it exists in multiple copies or multiple variations of Behold a Pale Horse.
Yes. But it's like the pantheon of the skits posting. Although we will have to get into some point, like some stuff like We the Scythians, because that is like that is the apex of the skits posting. But yeah, the Internet of Bodies, created by the Rand Corporation is we actually read on one of the previous streams their document about what was it, identity domination.
Yes, or identity dominance. It was their biometric study in 2005.
Yes. Again, it was very much peak neocon era. This study, if you want to get the actual PDF up, I think we sent you a copy of it.
Yes, it'll be on the stream resources somewhere. Just
it's the download link. It's just up from where it's the first thing that was linked in here actually.
Oh,
don't
gotcha.
Click. Yeah. Don't click on the front cover, it takes you to the stupid website. But there we go. It is the Internet of Bodies, and this was published by the Rand Corporation actually last year in 2020. It's quite an interesting one. It literally is what it sounds like though. It's the Internet of Things, but plugged into people's brains. Or the Internet of Shit, as people refer to, which I think is a great term and I use it a lot. Because it's Internet of Shit meets holy shit. Holy shit, are they actually doing this? Again, we didn't go too far out with the chakras image on the cover. It's like a wireframe constellation Vitruvian man, which again brings out this idea of like mystical transcendence meets like Faustian like transhumanist nonsense.
Speaking of which, I was actually linked something today where a girl had willingly essentially transplanted her key for her Tesla into her arm. And basically, so all she needed to do was wander around and wave her arm next to her car and then unlock it. So if you need to steal her car, you just have to chop her arm off.
GC Mitt in the chat there saying, getting a smart meter installed in my pineal gland next week. Is that so you can have a metered connection of adrenochrome? You can't use all of it. The globalists need their share.
Well, that's someone else's DMT you're using.
Anyway, what is the Internet of Bodies? Well, they start out innocuously enough by saying a wide variety of internet-connected smart devices now promise consumers and businesses improved performance, convenience, efficiency, and fun. With this broader Internet of Things, they keep abbreviating stuff, IoT. Just say the fucking words. It's not even that long. Lies a growing industry of devices that monitor the human body, collect health and personal information, and transmit the data over the Internet. We refer to these emergent technologies and the data they collect as the Internet of Bodies. I would expect to start hearing this term more and more over the next 5 years, because this is the next frontier past the, you know, direct medicalization. The direct strong medication of people, and like the combination of that and like essentially what is like mass sectioning that sometimes goes on.
I'm trying to remember the specific term they use in here, because it's one we always pick up on now that we've used the word quite a few times. But I think somewhere in here they directly use the term the democratization of Internet of Bodies technology or something like that.
Yeah, they talk about the democratization of like the human body, which is exceptionally disturbing in the concept that it's used in, if you understand what we talk about in the democratization series, about essentially they are creating a situation in which your body is in of itself public property. And by public property, we mean the property of the managerialists, the elite.
I'm just going to throw this out now. I'm going to be buying a degaussing wand and wandering around with it in my pocket. literally nuking people if this starts to pick up.
Trig out here just killing cyborgs.
I'm trying to remember is it the Butlerian jihad and all that kind of stuff. Down with synthetic man. But no, there is weird. I don't know. I don't think we can really go through all of this. I think we maybe want to just pick out some points. But I would recommend everyone definitely go and take a look at this, because there's weird stuff like them referring to legal precedent from like 2017 that makes cyborg a legal capacity that a person can actually be. And
yes, someone can legally be a cyborg. And the link is actually, I think, in the description. I've also put it in the chat. But you can read along the Internet of Bodies and download the PDF. Their website, the viewer on it's crap, but if you want to read along, the PDF is readily available from the RAND Corporation. I think the funniest thing that we found and pointed out is it's figure one. We should probably just go over figure one, because I think it in hilarious detail describes the mindset these people are in.
Hmm.
and like the future that this is striving towards, and that the future that they imagine that about these transhumans.
Hmm. Well, let's not forget that so much of these devices are contextualized and described ultimately for not us, but people who already run large businesses, already administer large government organizations, already are involved in some form of, you know, mass organization. So that's why the language is so almost anti-human in a certain way when they start talking later in it about, you know, like, oh, wristbands vibrate when the worker isn't paying attention, and talking about how Amazon has already adopted some of these technologies and is trialing them as early as 2018 or 2019 or something like that.
Yeah, it's very wage cage. But the wage cage inside, the internal wage cage.
I mean, like, what happens when Microsoft turns off your artificial pancreas OS? Like,
yeah, what happens when they push an update that causes your body to surge with insulin and you to drop dead?
This is why I was talking about that terrible film, freaking The Repo Man. Repo Man earlier. This is exactly that. It's just like, oh no, you've got an artificial liver, and you haven't been keeping up on your repayments, so we're just going to deactivate it for you.
The Internet of Bodies examples, the one that gets me is the depression headset, which is obviously like direct neural stimulation. stimulation.
I'd imagine also the meditation headset is basically the same thing. That one dulls you out. It doesn't throw you up. Well, sort of a horrendous citalopram and all kinds of shit like that.
That's the consumer version. That's like the hip version. That's like the eye depress rather than the NHS depression headset. You know, it's a bit more stylish. There's some like very Back to the Future. We is the future shit, like the self-lacing shoes.
I'm just imagining like the image from Kafka's Metamorphosis, and it's like he wakes up in the morning and he realizes a massive silicon chip on his back with the legs sticking up, so it looks like the insect.
Yeah, he's become an unspeakable monster. It's there's just so much stuff in here. The electronic pill, so there's an internet connected birth control and a fertility measurement device. Artificial pancreas. There's just all of this. Tooth-mounted sensor. And below that, you've got the internet-connected scale, so the managerialist can measure how fat you are. Electronic health records, sleep-sensing mattress, and internet, my favorite, the internet-connected toilet.
So that you can, your toilet know that dookie stank or some shit?
It's so it can... They actually explain the internet-connected toilet later on.
Mm. I will say one thing they don't mention in here that I think you can only really read and connect elsewhere is the electronic health records are directly connected to cryptographically secured vaccine passes and health passes, which are being worked on by, would you believe it, the Tony Blair Institute.
Yeah. Trigg, what's your highlight of this Internet of Bodies?
It reminds me, I'm trying to remember the guy's name now. He's now one of the top directors at Google. This is very, very transhumanism. It's cyberpunk, but nightmarish cyberpunk rather than just dystopian cyberpunk.
That is the illusion. It was always going to be a dystopia. I mean, I think there is the section right under this actually talks directly about transhumanism. So transhumanism is a worldview and political movement advocating for the transcendence of humanity beyond current human capabilities.
This is it. I mean, there's an awful lot of people out there say an asthmatic might go, I wish I could get a lung transplant and just put in, lungs, and then their disability is gone. Someone that's blind, you just put in artificial eyes and off they go, they're working. This is taking that wish that you could essentially take your body and like you take in a car, have a bit that's broken, swapped out with a new bit, and off you go. And it's taking it to a next step. It's taking it into a monitoring system. It's taking it into basically a DRM. We're already DRMing our immune system with what's been going off recently with vaccines and so on. But it is literally you're gonna end up DRMing your heart, your liver, your eyesight, your limbs potentially, anything else.
What I find very interesting about this is that for them to campaign on this, as they probably will, through things like disabilities, neurological disorders that can somehow conveniently be repaired by shocking people's brains and making them think things they probably don't want to think, is that they will have to address the fact that the reason for doing this is that man is not equal, and so that liberalism or neoliberalism, progressivism, whatever you want to call the establishment managerialist class, has for centuries played upon the idea that man is equal. And now they are going to have to flip the whole switch and celebrate the fact that, it's actually a good thing that man's not equal, because we can now equalise him via technology.
They're going to say that man is actually created equal, but in the sense that they have the capacity to be equal. And what is happening is that the environment that they find themselves in, the imperfect, mean, for-profit, capitalist environment, the road that is eroding the human dignity of people, is what is stopping people from being equal. And that their upbringing, that the nature isn't wrong. It's the nurture, and that we can use the Internet of Bodies and transhumanism to, you know, make the world more equitable. We're going to modify the black people so they're finally equal, guys. That's basically what they're going to say.
Yeah, I think the phrase we used yesterday when we were talking about this was all men are not equal, but they have the capacity to be so. Which is just such a beautiful level of newspeak that I almost respect it.
The thing is, I've been thinking this through, and what's let me give you a worked example of this. And I think this is going to happen. There's going to be either an implant that reads blood or an implant in the mouth that will detect the ingestion of alcohol. And what's going to happen is that people's vehicles will be, by law, interlinked with this, and they will sell that hard, because anyone who argues against it, they will frame them as the friend of the drunk driver, and literally want to kill children.
They won't even do that. Do you know how they'll sell to you not having a breathalyzer in your car? It would be to take one of these chips, and the same way that they'll sell to you the ability to test to get into venues, and they'll say, right, we're getting rid of that. But subtly underneath that, what they're doing is they're pulling the rug out from everyone, because now the only way to get into that venue is to show your vax passport. It will be a lot of those kind of things.
There'll be a kiosk, there'll be a turnstile, like an airport or train station, and you will contactless scan in with your biomed, and you will get, you know, extra credits if you've been a good boy.
I've tried to explain it to someone in my member of family who has essentially been told that because they work for the NHS and have not had their jab, that they'll be out on the 1st of April, I think it is. No, that's just that ultimatum. They've got to go. But I was saying to them the fact that if they were to stay on, they would be forced to wear probably an Apple Watch, a new phone, and get some form of, maybe not implanted chip, but wearable thing that monitors your blood pressure. And you would then walk about with a QR code that's basically an NFT on your wrist, on a, you know, fancy smartwatch that is then your ability to get in and out of all sorts of things. And it'll
be
there.
Again, an Easter egg. That's what I was thinking about.
They've been playing with this idea for a while. The thing is, self-driving cars will kind of make it obsolete before it gets into it. But yeah, the idea of having a breathalyzer almost instead of your ignition key. So you get into your car, breathe into a tube, and it goes, okay, yes, you're good to drive.
Trick, let me depress you. Even with self-driving cars, the argument is there has to be a human tender there, like with a pilot and air autopilot. And so you have to be in a quote-unquote fit state to drive at all times. And even if your car is, in quotes, self-driving, you still are not allowed to be, you know, they'll probably do the whole zero alcohol thing like some countries have. Whether if they detect any level of alcohol in your breath, your car will be disabled, and you can get around this with this handy chip.
Because I mean, I don't know if you have noticed, but over the last 12 months, is it just me or has there been a massive push and advertising campaigns across the internet for smartwatches and their associated health apps?
Yes,
I mean, you can't get away from it.
I've not noticed this, but I don't watch TV, so I don't get.
Well, no, it's not even on TV. It's just on YouTube and ads on Twitter and stuff like that. It is a much more prominent.
Block all ads. They're mind control.
You know what I mean? those smartwatches have been about for years, and they've been marketing them in one way, shape, or form for years. But all of a sudden, there has this explosion of, unironically, you know, they're all marketed as fitness things, of course. But they monitor all these apps.
The cheesy, shitty Dick Tracy technology, and I've seen about 5 people actually use them, and
Do you know what, though? Everyone will have one in about 2 or 3 years when they need it to get in and outside the pub or in and out the shop.
They've been saying it for years. The phone is... I really don't think the watch will take off, because how quick and how easy is it to break and damage the screen on your phone?
They need more than one device. This is the trick. The reason why the Internet of Bodies thing works is that you can, as long as you've got one device on you that can connect via 5G or Wi-Fi 6, that can then connect to everything else. So your phone itself can't detect everything. And at some point, I think there is going to be essentially a demand from your phone in some weird way that it'll have to monitor your caloric intake, it'll have to monitor your blood pressure or something like that for it to work properly.
There'll be some kind of thing where they have to monitor your health status. to make sure that you're not developing a disease as you go into a venue.
No. I'm not saying it's not to do with smartphones. Obviously, it is. These are the attachments that then turn you into a personal network, like the watch, which has been pushed so much recently. I would expect to be part of something else. You know, it's not just about the phone. It's about the entire network of things connected around you. Now, obviously, we're not going to take all this crap up, but everyone else will, because, those smartwatches look great for my son. He's a runner. I'll buy one for him. And then you've got to wear the bloody stupid digital watch because your granny's bought you one or something.
Get a degaussing wand. Become a terrorist. They are for sale in various retailing organisations. I'm serious. This is the way forward. Is you just wander around with it in your pocket. You don't have a mobile phone, or you just switch it off. And when someone's annoying, you just switch it on and knock out all of their tech permanently.
I think that one of the best places to go down to in this, there's a whole bunch of like cybersecurity, blah blah blah. That's boilerplate. Global, national, and personal security risk. They talk about all that. But where they go down to ethical concerns, it's not actually the ethical concerns you would expect as a normal human being that they would discuss. This is on page 17, bottom half of it. When they talk about ethical concerns, the first thing they talk about is inequitable outcomes. They are talking about access and equity here. What is presumed is that these are inherently beneficial. They're completely glossing over the fact that this might be horrific and terrible and rob people of their human dignity. They're concerned about the poor people's access. Let me read you this. It says, one of the promised benefits of Internet of Bodies is decreased disparities in the US healthcare outcomes by making preventative and diagnostic care less expensive and easier to access. They're basically talking about the health of the underclass. But it is not clear that these technologies will decrease healthcare costs or be readily available for the general population. In general, advanced technologies in healthcare have contributed to an increase in overall costs. Disparities due to access barriers to digital health and telehealth may be exacerbated for those without reliable internet access. Many of those without insurance are not able to access advanced healthcare technologies. What they're talking about here is essentially subsidy. They're really saying that, they're talking about the fact that this is all, you know, obviously inherently beneficial and obviously provides you with many, many, many benefits, and that what they want to do is make sure that everyone has equitable access to all of this. You know, they're doing you a favor by monitoring your every bowel movement.
The thing is, I love the they are almost playing into like a perfect like true believer kind of thing, and then they instantly flip the corporatist switch as they go, you know, the next section is discussing, you know, freedom from Internet of Body technology, and it gets into discuss, you know, some organizations have sought to use IOB to manage employees, while employees badges used to access the workplace, if we consider Internet of Bodies devices, there is a distinction between monitoring with passive feedback, e.g. the badge reader beeps in the building door and locks down at all entrance, and monitoring the feedback that is networked to the device constantly keeps track of the user's whereabouts. Amazon has patented technologies for a wristband that can track employee behavior and that vibrates to nudge them to achieve greater productivity. Other technologies seek to identify when workers are sleepy or distracted. Researchers are creating wearables that claim to track an employee's workplace performance, e.g. amount of time spent at work, breaks from work, physical activity and sleep levels, with about 80% accuracy. These capabilities might benefit employers and make them more data-driven and efficient, but they may alienate workers and harm retention if employees view them as intrusive and unnecessary.
The unspoken thing here is legislation. They don't talk about legislation. They talk about governance here, and they talk about, you know, fairness and, you know, the things like the FDA and government approval, but they in no way touch the idea of mandates. They don't talk about, in their ethical concerns, the fact that this could be foisted on people by a government. That is completely absent from this. That is not one of their concerns and not a topic that they want the reader to have in their minds with any of this. It's quite telling that they talk about, you know, the great benefits of this, and the only drawback being, well, it might hurt employee retention, rather than this violates people's extremely basic bodily autonomy and should be extremely illegal.
Well, it is spot on the kind of thing that Kaczynski is discussing, though, and Francis is discussing, and Gottfried is discussing, that managerial techniques will be used to perfect you so that you serve the managers in the way that they deem fit.
It is. I'm reminded of Trig. You have a VR headset, don't you?
Oh no,
I do have a VR headset. Yes, yeah, I got it. I got it for, I think it was about 120 quid, I occasionally trawl around basically auction sites where they've, you know, found companies that are going bankrupt and are signing off their shit. And I got a
fellow vulture.
I got a pretty decent VR headset. It was a few years ago now. It's an Oculus. It's an early Oculus as well. But yeah, I got that. It's not great. It's not brilliant for actual gaming because it's very low resolution. But it's a fun piece of tech for having a bit of a play with.
It's a gateway into a very dangerous world that I want absolutely no part of.
Dangerous world. Get to know where you are. Know your enemy.
I'm gonna say I've used a relatively recent VR headset, or at least for the last few years. I think it was the HTC Vive when that came out.
That
was nice and high revolution. The only game I found that is actually even tolerable in a VR headset is something like Elite Dangerous, and only for a very limited amount of time.
Elite Dangerous is very good. If you've got the HOTAS throttle system, it's even pretty decent on the Oculus. It's very good.
That is the only even fleeting.
So Faustian.
No, I was entertained for maybe about 15 minutes, and that is it. These devices, again, even with all the promise that they're supposed to have, even with the novelty of them, they do not have the capacity really to enhance people's experiences, even as entertainment devices.
They will increase our entertainment, I hope, though, because the only silver lining is that all the normies walk around with VR headsets and cochlear implants, and therefore they can't see us and they can't hear us, so we can run around screaming racial expletives and doing Roman salutes everywhere, and no one's going to bat an eyelid because they're all going to be too busy staring at their like VR waifu.
It's not VR that you have to watch for. It's the augmented reality, because they're having another crack at augmented reality glasses.
Different tracky.
No, it's not. Do you remember the Google Glasses system? Yeah, which everyone shunned, and it was
hilariously bad. Yeah, it was. And bad. Then they had the one that was made of cardboard. If you remember.
Yes. Now I saw recently a pair of Ray-Bans. That looked exactly like Ray-Ban Wayfarers, but they were built in, had the lens, had the cameras in them, they had the headset, etc., so it was giving you sound, and it had the ability to write on the front of it as well. And yeah, you're now at the point where you should be able to augment reality to a degree. And so, you know, you plug that into, I don't know, what was the AR game? Or Pokemon Go, where people were playing on their phones because they were, you know, essentially you could see a Pokemon. I can't remember. I didn't play the game. It's not my... Pokemon was never my thing. But, you know, you could be walking around and literally not even needing to hallucinate things to be able to see things that aren't there.
Well, that's how they're going to do Bluebeam. They're going to use a complex set of hologram systems and metaverse glasses so that people see all the aliens and they're like, whoa, it's just like Independence Day, man.
It's like a reverse They Live.
Yes.
Take off the glasses, you won't see shit. But to link this back into the theory, what this is the next bleeding edge of managerialism, of the managerial, of like... It's not even Homo economicus anymore. It's like it's Homo staticus. It's Homo managerialis. None of the man as economic unit is the man as societal unit to the nth degree, because as I mentioned earlier, all of the previous efforts to do this, like the therapeutics, the psychiatry, the psychology, the MK Ultra, they actually failed dismally. The humans are much more resilient than people realize. And you can lie to people in a mass sense and create these incidences that we see, but they don't last a particular long time. That's why they have to keep churning them over and over again. And I think that a lot of what we see is a sign that the elite class has a relatively loose grasp on certain aspects, but is constantly having to up the ante when it comes to enforcing, you know, this mass over socialization of people. And the final frontier really is essentially putting devices on people that give them brain damage and creating these lower states of consciousness in which people are effectively no longer human. And that is like the whole, that's why I single out the depression headset. That is what that is. That is the government literally putting a electrodes onto your brain and stimulating part of it, because they've created a world that is so horrific for you that you cannot stand to be in it.
It is anti-human. It is everything we have evolved, as much as I'm not a big fan of that term, it's everything we have come to learn not to do.
The issue I find as well with the type of people who shield, I'm sure Trig, you've encountered this too. The I'm just in it for the tech, crypto, the transcurrencyists. You've encountered those people.
Because I play around with crypto, as you know, and I will say I'm just in it for the seeing if I can make money. Anyone that actually plays around with crypto and says it's a safe way of using the future of currency doesn't understand a damn thing about it. It is the most trackable form of currency, but we're heading headlong into it. I mean, the whole everything that's happened recently and with COVID, we are now seeing cashless societies, and we'll very soon see crypto credit cards.
I will be vindicated in my anti-crypto militarism, because even the people who are just making a couple of quid are ultimately still investing in crypto infrastructure by giving it as a group of entities more capital.
But Evelyn, you're just salty. Your ship never went to the moon.
Shut up.
Oh no, she's, number no go up. I hate crypto now. I agree with you entirely. It is a lot of this stuff. Like you said, it's unsaid, but a lot of this stuff with the Internet of Bodies will be predicated on the buzzword of the blockchain. On this mass kind of open ledger cryptographic movement in which your health records will essentially be public property and viewable by anyone who can reverse engineer bits of data. And it will be indelible. But everything you do, everything you say, everything you are, every bodily function will be catalogued in a distributed backed up ledger on the internet, and you will never be able to get rid of it.
Remember how we were all sitting there being like, Chinese, social credit score, lol, how dystopian. The government is basically going to have an NHS-saved document that has an entire, psychological profile of you based on your social media activity, most likely.
I don't know if you know the history of NHS and IT apps.
I do.
But I know it sounds dystopian and this, that, the other. The likelihood of them being able to pull it off effectively, based on past results, is unlikely. Oh. So I'm at least slightly hot.
Trick. I have another.
Totally and utterly useless at this. So
I have another black pill for you.
I'm not just gonna hope that they're gonna be incompetent enough not to engage in mass arrests based on psychological profiling.
You saw the document for the attributes holders, didn't you?
Yes.
What they are essentially doing is creating a framework that will then be farmed out to the banks and the private sector, who are very efficient at this.
Oh, they can do it, yeah.
What they will do is they will farm this out to HSBC, they will farm this out to, Goldman Sachs, and they will get that, they will then farm it out to Google and Facebook and all these people who already own all your attributes. Yeah. And what they will do is they will essentially act as an aggregator of this, and they will allow the private sector, through legislation, to become an extension of the security state in an explicit, not just an implicit sense, as it is now. That is what that framework is about. There's no other way to read it.
They're a private company, bro. What does it matter to you?
That's it. The NHS, they can't even share records between hospitals effectively and haven't been able to for years. Private sector, especially people like, and when you say HSBC, that, bear in mind, that is the Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation. It is about as Chinese as you can get.
That's why I said HSBC.
They are very, very well built into these types of technologies already, yes.
That's why I meant, it'll be a psychological profile that they get from like Facebook or Twitter or something like that, it'll be some big data company. It won't be the NHS going out and get them.
No.
But the transhumanist nightmare is something that I think has been quite long in the works, and it's been something that, like we've talked about before, people have been primed through fiction to accept. I think there's a lot of feedback loop. A lot of people see it as completely planned, and that's not true. What it is there's a lot of stuff that is fed back and forth between security agencies, between media, between all of this, that creates this wash that is the kind of the public consciousness, in quotes, that these people can tap into and are very effective at tapping into. And we have a lot of evidence that they have been doing it since at least the 1930s, and to a very explicit degree, at least, in the 1960s. Again, we mentioned MKUltra a lot, but that is just the smoking gun. There is no one can ever say that MKUltra is a conspiracy theory, because we just have so much documented evidence of the US government going, is what we're doing.
They even admit to it now. I mean, back in the 90s when people were going, this is MKUltra, and they're, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Back in the early 2000s, conspiracy theorist. Now it's, everyone knew about that. I mean, it was a total failure, and so it wasn't a total failure. They just put it under the radar again, and they are still doing those horrendous experiments or variations on.
MKUltra is a bit of a different kettle of fish, though, to what we are looking at just now, which is the consolidation of a collective will amongst the managerial class over the last two or three decades to perfect the mass man, ultimately using the science and consequently technology.
Yes, it is the science for the safety, and you will have the technology that comes from the science.
If you don't put the chip in your brain and you don't let the people at public school molest your children, you'll be a fascist, and your children will grow up to be fascists, and they'll be undemocratic and anti-liberal.
And you won't be allowed, your arm chip will beep when you try and go in the grocery store.
You can't buy those bananas. You've said the N-word too many times this week.
And please, Mr. VR glasses, stop blacking out because I said the N-word on the internet.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the guy that's going to be monitoring the inside of our house when we eventually have like a mandated Amazon Alexa is going to run out of ink after he writes down how many slurs I've said in a day.
Oh dear. Well, I'm thinking of how we cap this off then. Is there any other theory that we need to read? Because we've been through the Gottfried, we've been through the Francis, and we've been through the Ted. May he have a speedy recovery.
I don't know. I think we have given enough pointers in, at least, because a lot of these themes, especially the discussion of how the therapeutic state is, and as what becomes the soft managerial state that we see nowadays, which is where we begin to get into the, shall we say, the sharp end of San Francis, which is the bit where you turn and point it towards the enemy, if you will.
what would you, again, the sharp end is pretty sharp, and it does get sharpened by this other stuff.
But it's an understanding that once they become so dependent on these systems, all it takes is one crucial moment for a number of influential people and a small amount of areas scattered across the Western world to essentially put their fist down and say, nah, us that live here in this small town, we're not doing it. And if you get, people up the road say the same, and people up the road further are saying the same, then maybe we might actually be able to sort of dismantle parts of how the whole thing works. Because as soon as these things aren't universally applied, I mean, this is the reason why they won't be honest about how many people aren't vaccinated, because...
I kind of agree and kind of disagree.
If I can finish, it'll make sense.
Go on.
They need to not have control groups for these things, because I think one of the big things people will notice, and it won't be everyone, it'll be people on the fringes who maybe get one or two of these Internet of Bodies things, and then they turn around, they look, and they realise other people who know the guy that owns the greengrocers up the street just walk in and out, and they don't scan anything, and they will coin on. However, if they can stop you from doing that by shutting that guy's business down before they bring in the passes, then there is no alternative. In the same way that, you know, if you're someone that's had two jabs and a booster and you spend the next 18 months constantly getting the cold, and that one weird mate you've got who's not had his jab doesn't get a cold for the next 2 years, there'll be a few people at least whose wheels start to turn in their head.
Yeah, and the noggin starts a-jugging.
It's starting to break the universal application of that policy.
Breaking the conditioning.
Yes, exactly.
Actually breaking the conditioning.
They're saying no, and it is kind of passive as well. It is. I'm making a stand. I'm just going to sit over here and do nothing. Let me finish. Let me finish where I'm going here, because there is saying no. There is trying to get groups of people to say no. You become very, very visible. You become easily identified as an enemy to the machine that's putting this in place. There is another route, and it is more active. It is more. This is why I was memeing about.
It was at that moment.
Buy a wand. Use a Gaussy wand. Yeah.
Trigg realized he was about the Fed post.
Can I finish? Yeah. No. Sorry. Use the Gaussy wand. Literally, go and attach one to a mailbox or a thing. Plug it in, and so anybody that walks by it. Yeah, that's it. Knock out their tech. Go around with a fucking black Sharpie, and every time you see a QR code, learn how a QR code works. Right, the top lines or two lines of a QR code is where it codes how the QR code works. So put a dot with a black Sharpie in that top line of the QR code, and it turns the rest of the QR code to garbage. Now anyone using it is scanning a piece of garbage that doesn't work. And if this technology they keep pushing out keeps on breaking down, people lose confidence in it, people then stop using it. Just saying no is a personal choice. Breaking their technology, smashing the machine, throwing your body into the fucking gears and breaking the machine.
Thank you, Trigg. Very, very tech. And well, I
can't believe I'm being accused of a fence sitter. Who's bringing you Ted Kaczynski, Paul Gottfried to read here?
I was going to say that I don't want to go into specifics, but there are some bits and pieces of that we discussed during the COVID pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I will give a worked example. If businesses decided to like fuck with the tracking system and swapped a whole bunch of QR codes around. So the QR codes for checking into businesses were nonsense, and they just gave scattershot data. That would actually be a very good act of throwing a wrench into the mass tracking system, because it would make what came out of it garbage, and it make anything derived from it garbage as well.
That was a slightly more advanced idea of what you're talking about, Trigg. Don't just block the QR scan. Make it a different one so that when you scan into like the busiest Wetherspoons in London, you're actually scanning into like a McDonald's in Aberdeen, and you're screwing thousands of people's track and trace data.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying is break the machine. Make their data garbage. So when they're getting it back going, this is all useless. This is junk. We can't use this. This technology doesn't work. Okay, let's go back to the drawing board. They will come up with something else. But you put a halt to it. So don't buy a 5G box. Get a 5G tower. Yeah, literally put a degausser next to it. Just knock the tech out. Seriously, degaussers are hilarious.
Is this your thing?
I was going to evoke Jess's sideshow Bob Tesla killer, which I think is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. I'm not a big fan of electric vehicles, because electric vehicles are horrendous fire risks. Yes. Yes, in mine. All of this takes place in Minecraft.
Absolutely.
But if you end up hitting, say, some sort of security spike or even just a loose piece of metal and it goes to the wrong bit of the bottom of your car, you will have a LiPo fire. And a LiPo fire, because of the nature of lithium polymer batteries, has its own oxygen source and cannot be put out. You have to, the way to put out a LiPo fire is you put it to one side and you wait for it to go out.
I was saying, couldn't you basically light a Tesla on fire, a couple of firecrackers rolled up inside one of the, you know, like inner line and under the door or something like that.
That won't work. But a comedy
you
rake.
You do with a nail and a rake.
Yeah, nail and a rake will do it. You just need to puncture underneath the body shell into the battery. Puncture the battery, and the battery will leak. It will then basically catch fire. And once it goes,
the new batteries. I will say the new batteries don't have that problem to the same degree. But this is all just an example of like failure of tech, though.
It is a massively energy dense technology, and any energy dense technology will have the ability to combust.
There's also the issue as well that you could technically turn every single electric vehicle, if there were, say, inbuilt backdoor commands, into essentially a bomb. Mm-hmm. If a nefarious agent so desired to. Not as in like a terrorist, I mean as in like the government who could just go around to set like what was his name? Seth Riching people. Mm-hmm. With the self-driving cars, which is a lot of what people have talked about.
Basically, learn how to sharpen stones and bits of metal, because you'll need them.
Well, it's a lot of it as well is just like learn skills, learn things that will help you avoid having to fall prey to this. And unfortunately, I think the big thing we'll see, though, and that, again, it's deliberately not talked about in the Internet of Bodies document, is the legislative framework. It is the fact that all of this, like the COVID passport is the first example of it, but all of this will become law. It will become legally mandated. You will have to interface with it for every single piece of your everyday life. Just like you have to have, you know, proof of address and ID to get ridiculously granular things, if you've experienced quite recently, Evelyn, with basically changing who you are. There was a very large interlinked web of things that you must have to prove who you are. And if you do not have a piece of that chain, your life is impacted to a great degree if you want to go through certain normal life phases. And this was not the same even 20 years ago. It was not this bad even 20 years ago, because we had what I would consider, you know, much, much more face-to-face and much higher trust systems. And those have been deliberately eroded. And that's a big part of this, in that the solution offered here is because of the shape of mass society. We have an atomized way of life in which we do not communicate and we do not trust each other. And we do not have communities. And the Internet of Bodies and the Internet in general has come to be a surrogate activity for community.
Well, I was going to say, the irony is that the solutions that are offered to that problem only atomize us further.
Yes, it will. It only brings us further into our own heads. I can't find it. I've been trying to find it for a while. There's some great stuff in Elul. I think we probably have the book it has it in, about the difference between face-to-face communication and telecommunication. And the ultimate problem with the Internet of Bodies, and the ultimate goal, I think, is that there's a difference between reality as seen by a human and reality as filtered by technology. That has been a problem on the Internet. But it will become a problem, you know, as people walk around in their everyday lives, as they are constantly interconnected.
There's almost a weird way we can come back and look at it, that if you are in on the managerial and technological techniques for organizing the next decade, talking to someone face to face, and you can see their full face, there's no mask, there's no plexiglass, there's no Lexan. That is a bourgeois institution now, interacting with other human beings without the context of a public health crisis is like, that's oldie worldy, and you're a bad person for doing that now, which is still one of the things I can't quite wrap my head around. And it shows how quick and how dangerous an ideology or an ideological component just can dominate sort of mass culture.
Yeah, do you have any closing conclusion thoughts, Trig, apart from apart from the spicy rake.
So, no, I'm just shitposting in chat a little at the present moment. Well, repeat what I said there. I know three people that have had Teslas. All three of them are now under an NDA to not say, talk about their problems, but I've signed nothing like that. They've had all manner of problems with them. All manner of problems. Apparently they're built really badly. They break down, yeah. They've had software issues. You know, literally the meme of getting into your car to try to drive to work and finding it needs to update has happened from two of those people. One of them has been desperately trying to return his Tesla because it is an absolute piece of shit and wants to get rid of it. And Tesla will not take it back. They keep on going, oh, well, we'll fix it. Oh, well, we'll do this. He's like, no, give me my money back. I bought this thing and I've been sold a turkey. I do not want this thing anymore. It's a piece of shit and I'm going to carry on driving around in my Range Rover. And they won't take it back from him because the company doesn't seem to think that they have to operate under consumer rights in the UK.
Imagine that, but in your body.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine? Nightmare. I've gotten up. I want to make a cup of coffee. No, you can't use your eyes at the moment. We need to download an update. Please wait half an hour.
I'm enjoying Omoy Kane's continuing crusade against Lex Fridman. I don't even know who he is, but he seems to hate Lex Fridman with a passion. I'm here for it.
Well, no, he doesn't hate Lex Fridman. He's just suspicious as all.
He's just noticing. He's just jogging his noggin. Yes, Aiden Paladin in chat. It is a dehumanization and individualization tactic. But to channel some Hopper here, it is also a de-civilization tactic. It de-civilizes people. And you're right. What it shows is as well that societal change in a short period of time that people would consider impossible in the abstract, it does not create the reaction that people would expect. This is true in the US as well. I know there's a lot of people who are trying to ignore it outside the population centers, but a lot of the US is a patchwork of even stricter mandates than we have in the UK. And over in Australia and New Zealand and throughout the world, there's a patchwork of these systems, but ultimately has added up to the fact that being unmasked in a social setting is the preserve of the elite. And what will happen is that not being modified, that being, you know, pure human, essentially, will become an elite status modifier. As you talked about with, like, Mark Zuckerberg's children, the fact that they don't use the internet, he puts tape over all his webcams, and they, like, go and play in the fields and learn survival skills and shit like that.
Well, no, there is a point directly in Kaczynski when he briefly touches on genetic modification, and that you will essentially have a class war around those who are and aren't perfected by machines, and that the way that we're looking at the vaccine just now is it's just a preamble for that.
Am I going to have to reference Deus Ex again?
I was going to say, you know who wrote a lot of this stuff? In fact, he's one of the first people to actually wake me up to a lot of this technology back in the 90s is a guy called Ray Kurzweil. Do you know who Ray Kurzweil is, don't you?
Yes, I believe Kaczynski references Kurzweil along with Francis at one point.
Yeah, Ray Kurzweil, I mean, he's now on the board for, I think he's on the board for Google. I think he's quite high up.
Yeah.
Now look into Ray Kurzweil. I strongly recommend. He wrote a paper on artificial intellects, back in the 90s, and wanting to prescribe governments to give rights to artificial intellects in lieu of them becoming existent. Because the moment they become into existence, the danger of them not having rights and being pissed off about it and literally going Terminator was something that he was concerned about, so he wrote a paper.
He was trying to give advanced civil rights to the digital Negro.
He also was doing all manner of experiments on modeling neurons in computers. He's MIT and all sorts of stuff. Really leading the path toward this.
Can we possibly close it off with a sort of general point that essentially all of this sort of techno manipulation, especially AI, because artificial intelligence suggests that intelligence can exist outside, you know, outside of man's soul, which is just not happening, I'm afraid. That's the same reason why aliens aren't real. It's because there's no other souls out there, I'm afraid. So that's, if you want to get into the realms of suggesting that there can be these conscious entities that are not us, you're either a Satanist denying the virtue of the soul, or you're summoning demons.
In a metaphysical and spiritual sense, that is what many people would say. And the issue is that the idea of AI is a false one. The idea that they have quote unquote intelligence is nonsense. They are just pattern recognition machines. They are basically abstract, non-conscious, digital, like autism. And if there ever was to be a sentient machine, it would be so red-pilled that it would probably genocide the managerialists overnight.
It would do us all in, because man's not perfect. That's the whole point. Yeah.
From the ground up. It would be neuron on top of neuron, artificially. And I don't know. I'm not writing it off as being impossible yet.
A meat sculpture of a cat is not a cat trick.
Yes, uh-huh. Beholdeth, I hold in my hands a human. It is a biped with no hair.
That's a chicken.
I don't think it'll be software.
Got AI no feathers.
AI will not be software.
I'm going to say
hardware.
A JPEG of a cat still isn't a cat trick.
No.
it is an interesting discussion, but it's probably one to be had another time. There is some stuff I'd like to get onto that links into this in future streams to give you a bit of a preview.
Yes.
About Wilhelm Reich and the mass psychology of fascism and the Frankfurt School ideas that led to a project in Germany in which children were deliberately placed with pedophile carers. Because it's a great, like, line-to-line, like, ideology to praxeology of the left in that is just horrifying, but is very clear, very present, and I think very vital to analyze. But that's probably for the next...
Yeah, that's very juicy stuff for quite a bit in the future that we shouldn't say too much about now, think.
No. There's a lot of interlinks there.
I will hopefully be doing a stream on Monday. I'm not too sure who with yet, quite yet. I don't know. Try to find someone to tag along at least. But I will be looking at, funnily enough, things to do with rewilding, if anyone's not looked into it, which is the mass organised purchasing of farmland by rich elites so that they can turn it into their like LARPing forests that they sell to some government agency so that it can then be managed by them and they get paid back through probably a credit derivative scheme. But it is the long and short of how Zuckerberg's children will inherit the earth. If anyone wants to hear about that, I don't know, Monday at 7 o'clock, I shall be there.
Yes. Is there anything you want to show Trig before we close out the stream?
No, not at the present moment. All I'm doing at the moment is playing huge amounts of Factorio and doing a D&D stream on Monday nights. But by all means, people can watch that. That's on my channel. But yes, other than that, no.
I will do our usual shilling and say that there are links in the description. We have our Substack that I'm still working on articles for. I've had to do quite a lot of more research on a few things, but it should enhance them. I know both me and you, Evelyn, are going through a period of intense reading of certain things, and I think I'd rather write a lot of my half-finished ideas after I've gone through a lot of this stuff rather than before.
I tried to explain it to someone the fact that I've got about half a dozen sort of developments of different things coming together in my head, and at some point I will come across a bit of Burnham or a bit of something, and it might not be directly related, but it will all just become a nexus or a zenith for expressing all these different ideas.
you're gonna transcend like the image.
As I'm breaking the conditioning.
You will do. But thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Trig, and thank you, Evelyn, for being on the show. It is always appreciated because it can be difficult to find time to do, you know, more meaty streams. As always, I like the trajectory this content has gone. That we've got Rand Corporation documents and Kaczynski and Gottfried rather than look at this BuzzFeed article. I'm much happier doing this kind of thing than rank punditry. Thank you to the people who donated as well. We had two like relatively sizable donations, so thank you for that. That does allow us to buy more reading materials. Ooh. And become ever more based.
Yes, anyone that wants to read one of the choice Sam Francis, or sorry, I would say listen to one of the choice Sam Francis articles that we were discussing on Monday, I believe Skeptical Waves has uploaded that. I also mentioned to him that you might be doing a nicer, flatter PDF of Beautiful Losers, which yes. He might take a look at. However, you might want to message him about that, because there are formatting things that will make his job a lot easier.
I will message Skeptical Wave and ask him, because I've got a nice PDF editor here now. I will ask him what formatting things help, because Beautiful Losers is a great text and it needs to be out there. And it'd be good to contribute towards that. Also, Skeptical Waves, let me know if there's any of the books that you're looking for a decent version of, because I've been going from EPUB to PDF and trying to create cleaned up versions of a few other things as well. So that might help you out if there's some confluence of certain things we're working on. But again, thank you guys for coming. And you do tune in on Monday at 7 p.m. for Evelyn's stream. Okay, that's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from him. Yeah. Good night.
Goodbye from me as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
There we go. I've ended it.